Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Maryland's two current senators want a National Guard air squadron sent from D.C. to Maryland for a yes vote on the RFK site bill. What? Sam Fortier is one of several Washington Post reporters who broke this story yesterday. He will jump on with us at 11 a.m. We'll talk some football with Sam as well. But kind of a crazy story and a lot of, I think, complexity to it because you have to understand, and I think I understand a little bit better, the lack of National Guard air support in the state of Maryland. Apparently, they don't have any of it, and it was recently taken away from them. They want it back. And for getting it back, they apparently will vote yes on the RFK site plan. Go figure. Much more on that coming up. Sam Fortier at 11 a.m. SiriusXM's college football analyst Bobby Carpenter. He does some work with our own Denton Day. He'll join us at 12. Denton, what did you think of the rankings last night?
I'm glad that Miami was not in it. I don't think that Alabama should have been in it. But other than that, I thought they were fine. I think they're going to screw the ACC, by the way.
Yeah, what I would, so for those that didn't follow the, you know, college football playoff rankings that came out last night, the big story was that Alabama jumped Miami into a spot in which if things go normally over the weekend, meaning the favorites win the conference championship games, they would be in the playoff and Miami would be out. I'll start with this. I have no problem with Alabama as a 9-3 team jumping a 10-2 Miami team who cannot stop anybody and has lost two of its last three games to Georgia Tech and to Syracuse. Alabama's loss to Oklahoma, Denton, was a bad, ugly-looking loss. There is no doubt about that. Their other loss, or their other losses, you know, they have that Vanderbilt loss, as we know, and that didn't really prove to be the worst loss of all time. Vanderbilt was a pretty good football team for much of the year. They lost to Tennessee, ranked higher than Alabama in the rankings. And I just think that right now, Alabama is a better team than Miami, and even resume-wise deserves to be above Miami. I think you agree with that, right?
Yeah, Miami should not have been in. It should have been Ole Miss.
Ole Miss instead of Alabama?
Instead of Alabama, yeah.
Okay, so that's a different argument altogether. The big story last night, though, was Alabama jumping Miami. Now, explain to me how Alabama gets bumped by results this weekend in the college football and the championship games, in the conference championship games.
Alabama would not. They're in. What I think would happen.
Hold on for a second. What if Clemson beats SMU?
Then SMU falls out. That's why I'm upset. Because
I don't think they do.
The placement of Alabama shows me, because every time that we've seen a team, Kevin, that's in the top 12 lose a football game, how many spots do they drop? They drop four spots. Right now, four spots for SMU In the bracket, they're a 3 seed because they're the best team out of the ACC. But in the actual rankings, they're an 8 seed. If they drop 4 spots, they would then fall behind Alabama. I think traditionally, it should not cause SMU to fall out of the
playoff. That's random, though.
That is random.
You don't know that they'll drop 4 spots. I think SMU being ranked where they were was an indication that Clemson becomes a bid stealer from Alabama if they beat SMU. Now, context matters here. If Clemson were to absolutely destroy SMU, you know, 44-3, then the eye test may become a different one for SMU than it was heading into these rankings. But I believe that there is certainly a lot of conversation about Clemson beating SMU, knocking the last team to get into the field based on last night, which was Bama as a 12 seed. They were the last team to get in terms of an at-large. The Big 12 champion, Arizona State, or Iowa State, is going to snag a bid with their conference championship result, and they'll likely be a 12 seed. It's still possible that they could move into the bye situation if Boise loses to UNLV. Boise, I don't think, becomes a bid stealer. I think SMU becomes a bid stealer if Clemson wins a close game over the Mustangs.
If it's a close game,
and I think
game,
that could
yes.
knock Bama out.
But if it's a double-digit game, I think SMU falls.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I think even if it's
10.
You said if SMU loses, they're out. I don't think they are out if they lose. I think if they get blown out, they're out perhaps and Bama's in.
Well, so what do you
But I think if it's a competitive loss, they're in and Bama's out.
What's a blowout?
A blowout in that situation is 17 or more.
See, I think if it's double digits.
In college football.
I think
in the NFL, it's 2 touchdowns. In college football, it's more than 2 touchdowns.
And that's where we're on different sides. I think if it's double digits, SMU falls. They want Bama in.
If they lost a 38-28 game to Clemson that was competitive, I think this is where you get into a bit of the flaw with the system, right? Because SMU is in today. And they earned their way into the ACC championship game, by the way, as the number 1 seed in that ACC title game right. on Saturday night. And this is where the system's a bit flawed, because if they didn't have to play an extra game, they'd be in. But Correct. They do have to play an extra game, a championship game. And by the way, I think there's some benefit in playing this extra game. The benefit is for a bye, for a first-round bye. You know, but what you're suggesting is they're playing this extra game that as an example, Georgia and Indiana, and by the way, Notre Dame and Alabama and Ohio State and Tennessee don't have to play, and they'll be penalized for it if they lose.
I believe the committee would. I don't believe they should. I believe the committee would. You know, Ward Manuel was—he did like a teleconference, and he's on ESPN, and
he's confusing. By the way, I'm done listening to this guy. This every time he speaks, I'm like, even Reese Davis last night in interviewing him got confused and had to clarify for everybody what he thought he heard from this guy. Terrible communicator.
To be fair, everyone that's been in that spot is, because they're tasked with doing too much. There's so much that goes on there. I wish we had legitimate clarity. You know, I know we can't put a microphone in the room. People would get uncomfortable with that. But I need more clarity than what he provides. Because the reason I feel this way is because he alluded to the idea that if Clemson beats SMU, they would then have to look more closely at SMU and Alabama, meaning that SMU would not be guaranteed a spot in. Because if you're going to put Alabama up against anybody, in the eyes of the committee, Alabama's going to get in, whether they deserve to or not. I think if you look at the teams that could have that got that final spot with Miami, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Bama, Bama was the least deserving, right? They scored 3 points 2 weeks ago. 3 points.
I know.
They're an offensive team.
It was bad.
It was
Oklahoma's
awful.
Oklahoma was one of the better defensive teams in the country, but what they gave up to Oklahoma's quarterback in that game was a first for Oklahoma offensively. I guess, like, I don't know. I think SMU has earned their way in, and I think the only thing that changes the committee's mind is an absolute destruction of them by Clemson, which, by the way, I don't think it'll happen. I think SMU can win that game. The line is kind of short, so I think it'll be a very competitive game, but I don't think they get blown out by Clemson. But if they do get blown out, and I would say, I'd say more than 14, but I'd actually say 17 or more, you know, something like, you know, 45 to 28 might be, or 27, something like that. A game that's not competitive, where SMU doesn't have a chance, and it is clear that the toughest opponent, other than BYU, that they have faced all season long, is out of their class. That's what has to be obvious to the committee. They have to look at SMU in their game against Clemson, if they lose, and say, they played a really good team for the first time this year, and they were completely outclassed. And that because SMU does not have, you know, they have the win over Pitt when Pitt may have been undefeated.
They were good at the time.
Yeah, they were good at the time. Actually, their win, you know, they scored like 65 or something like that against TCU earlier in the year. TCU was one of the hottest teams at the end of the year. But who else did they beat? Louisville?
They beat Louisville when Louisville was ranked. It's, you know, when you're looking at an ACC school, it's tough to find a good win. It's tough. Because they didn't play each other. Like, Clemson didn't play Miami.
Clemson would have had to beat Georgia or South Carolina to have a high-quality win.
Right. And they
lost to both of those teams.
Yeah. I would be stunned, now that we're on the subject, the most stunning result this weekend would be Clemson blowing out SMU, because I don't think that Clemson is a blow a good team out kind of team.
I agree with you. That's why I think SMU is going to be in, and Alabama has to root for SMU to win that ACC title game.
Yeah.
Because they still, everybody was kind of, you know, that was talking Bama over Miami, kind of behaved as if that meant they were in. And I think Heather Dinich did a really good job, she always does, of saying it's not over yet for Bama. Because there are still bid stealers out there. You know, it's kind of like the college basketball. When you get upsets in college tournament finals, and right now Clemson over SMU would be an upset, and they would, because Clemson's nowhere near a bid. They're 15th or 16th in the rankings? 17. So they're nowhere near a bid. So they would be one of those, you know, small conference. Yeah, I mean, I'm not putting ACC into small conference, but basketball, March time of year, where somebody wins a conference tournament that was nowhere near going to the tournament from the regular season champion, and now a conference has two bids when they should have only had one, and that steals one. That's what Clemson is potentially this weekend. I would ask you if you think that Boise's in with a loss, because I don't.
No.
Okay, just want to make sure we're clear on that one.
No.
Do you think that Georgia is in regardless of what happens against Texas?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, them being ranked 5, they're in the SEC, they're going to get in regardless.
So if UNLV beats Boise on Friday night, which, by the way, I like UNLV's chances in that game, if they were to win that game, that knocks Boise out. That's not a bid-stealing conference championship win. Iowa State and Arizona State are just playing for the Big 12 title. And by the way, probably a 12 seed, although if Arizona State wins, I still think there's a decent chance they could jump Boise for the 4 seed. And then Georgia and Texas, both of those teams are in. This is about seeding and a bye. Penn State and Oregon, same thing. The key game is Clemson and SMU. Clemson is a 2.5-point dog in the ACC title game in Charlotte. If they win, either SMU's out or Alabama's out. I think it would be Alabama, personally.
If Penn State gets destroyed, like I'm talking destroyed, do you think they fall out?
Say again?
If Penn State gets mutilated, like 50-12.
No.
You think they're still in?
I do. They're number 3 in these rankings. How far can you possibly drop them if they lose to Oregon? Right?
I mean, I think they would stay. I mean, if you lose 50-12 and everyone's healthy, That would be a tough look. They are really, I mean, they have kind of skated by in a lot of these conversations while everyone's been paying attention to Indiana and now looking at three-loss SEC teams. I mean, that Illinois win that they had in the middle of October, early October maybe, that is doing some heavy lifting for them to be the number three team in the country.
Look, I'm kind of with you. I mean, and I'd be thrilled if Franklin got somehow bumped, but I think they're in. I think the other interesting story is Ohio State loses at home as a 23.5-point dog. It is a rivalry game. We all understand that. But they drop four spots. That's it, to six. I mean, they are comfortably in the field. The only issue will they host a game? And right now it looks like they would host a game in the first round at the Shoe. In fact, in looking at the the bracket that, you know, based on the rankings last night, you would have, you know, potentially in that first round a game in State College, a game in Columbus, a game in South Bend. Weather would be a factor on December 20th and 21st in those three very cold weather sites. The other one would be Georgia. They would host Indiana and Athens. So exactly what we've always wanted, home field in an expanded playoff so that things like weather would be a factor. I've got a question for you, and I was thinking about this the other day. My son and I were talking about it. And we both gave the same answer, but I'm curious if you have the same answer. You know, these games in, let's just say that Happy Valley, the Shoe, South Bend, you know, Athens, all host games, all right, in the first round on December 20th and 21st. The students are gone. It's winter break. Mm-hmm. Do you think that those stadiums will be packed?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, because you're still like, Ohio State is,
yes,
a religion. Like, a lot of the places that are going to have home games that weekend, football is a massive deal. And if I was a student, honestly, I mean, obviously not everyone has this ability. If you live, for example, like if you go to Tennessee or whatever, and you live in California, if you live across the country, it'd be difficult. But if you don't live across the country, I would drive to a home playoff game. Get a couple of your boys in the vehicle, whip over there. I'd definitely get over there.
So I'm totally with you based on the venues we just talked about. Ohio State and Penn State are the state teams. The students are a big part of the game day, but a lot of the students live in the state. They're coming back for the game. You know, you won't have an empty seat in Happy Valley for a playoff game. You won't have an empty seat in the Horseshoe in Columbus for a playoff game. Same thing with Notre Dame, obviously. They're a national team, for crying out loud. But if you had, let's just say, like, there are some places where football isn't as important and it's not as much of a religion, where they, you know, they're not more likely than not going to host. Well, what if Indiana ended up hosting a game in Bloomington? You know, that is a big student contingent that's at those games. I'm just throwing it out there. It's one of those things that when you talk about, you know, playing, I've always thought you play the first round and you play the quarterfinals on home sites. Because it's tough to ask a fan base to travel to a quarterfinal site, then a semifinal site, and then potentially to a championship venue. You know, like, if the two teams that make it to the championship venue, their fans are going to have to travel three times in total, right?
Yeah.
And what we've had recently, two times, a semifinal and a championship venue. Now it's three to get there. And by the way, if that championship team comes from the first round, you know, you're talking about a home game, you know, that tends to be a weekend for people. That's a big investment. I'm not saying that these fan bases won't make it, but those are some of the things that come into consideration why, and it's why I always kind of felt like the quarterfinal round should be played at home venues as well. Not to mention that the four first round bye teams, Denton, actually, it's great that they advance without having to play a first-round game, but they miss a huge payday by playing a home game.
Yeah, these gates are massive. And, like, I don't know, this is going to sound rude, I don't know if you've been to a New Year's Six game as a fan before.
I haven't.
But Liberty was obviously in one last year. I went because I was media, but I was trying to get some of my boys to go. I was like, you guys should come out here. Like, I know it's Arizona. It's far. And they were looking at, and when you combine flights, tickets, accommodations, you're looking at upwards of $1,000 for one person. So yeah. If you're a family, if you're like a group of fellas, like if I had seven of my friends out there, that'd be $7,000 collectively that they paid to get out there. Like, that's a lot to ask for people who are in college. You know, you could work a couple extra shifts at Panera on the weekend, but that's not going to pay for you to get to Phoenix or to the Rose Bowl or something like that.
Well, it's just a good thing that your boys that decided not to go didn't go.
That too. Yeah.
Because that was a dose of reality game.
It was a great first quarter.
Was it a great first quarter?
They were leading.
It was Oregon, right?
Yeah, it was 7-6 after the first quarter. I don't know what happened after that.
What was the final? It was a whole lot to a little bit. I know that.
It was a lot to seven.
Yeah. So, interesting stuff. I mean, I do think what has become very clear is that the games here at the end of the year and now these conference championship games, so many more of them have real meaning than ever before. I mean, that's an obvious result of expanding the playoff field from 4 to 12. But I think it makes for even more drama and better conversations. I do think the one flaw that they're going to have to figure out is, well, I think there's two of them. I think number one is you cannot, you know, make, you know, an SMU as an example, you can't put them at risk because they earn their way into a conference championship game and they're sitting there as the eighth ranked team in the country. They'd be better off not playing that game. And that, you know, playing that game gives them a chance for a bye, okay? And so they don't have to win a first-round game. But that is a bit problematic in sort of the whole feeling of, oh my God, we are in now, but we have to play another game here, and that could knock us out. And number two is this, Denton. They have to just seed the field 1-12 and not do this conference champion gets a first round bye, because the idea that, you know, as an example, an Oregon, based on the latest, you know, projections as a one seed, would have to play the winner of Ohio State, Tennessee in the quarterfinal, that doesn't make any sense. You know, the Ohio State and Tennessee would be seeded a bit higher. I think you seed them 1 through 12, period. And, you know, your conference championship games are going to be helpful to seeding, and sometimes just to get you in, but I think you got to seed them 1 through 12. I mean, right now, Boise State is a 4 seed, would be almost better off being a 5 seed and playing in a first-round game rather than having to play Penn State in the quarterfinal game at home. Like, I don't see that as fair. I'd just seed them 1 through 12.
Also, how great would it be if, like, Alabama had to go play on the blue Boise field in round one? Yeah. Like, that is what this sport should be about.
Right now, though, for those that aren't paying attention, just understand this. We've been talking about it since, I don't know, summer. The weekend of December 20th, which is a Friday, December 21st, a Saturday, December 22nd, a Sunday, is going to be one of the all-time great football weekends in history. You're going to have a college football playoff game on Friday night. And based on the four projected games in the rankings last night, I can almost guarantee you that Alabama at Notre Dame is that Friday night primetime game. Bama at Notre Dame, Friday night, December 20th. On Saturday, it's a triple header. It starts with Tennessee at Ohio State at high noon. Then at 4 o'clock, it's Arizona State at Penn State. And then at night, it's Indiana at Georgia. All the while, you've got two NFL games going on that day. All right. That day includes Houston at Kansas City at 1 o'clock and Pittsburgh at Baltimore at 4:30. And then you get the Sunday slate, which is the Philly-Washington game here, for starters. That is going to be one of the all-time great football weekends, because it's not bowl games. Although, you know what, Denton? There will probably be bowl games going on simultaneously. If you're into betting on bowl games, who isn't? God, you agree Alabama at Notre Dame if that's the way it shakes out Friday night?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, you're going to put one of those two schools on a Friday night.
Yeah, be pretty wild. All right, want to get to something when we come back. It deals with something we haven't talked about in a while. The name. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. I got this from Daniel. Daniel writes, Kevin, excuse me. Kevin, I've been listening to you for a long time. I've never called or written, but I've been surprised by your reluctance to talk name and logo recently. What gives? Denton, somebody that wants us to talk more name. More. You know, the truth is, I know that most of you, I mean, the significant majority of you that listen to this show and are fans of the team have absolutely no issue when we talk about the name. But yeah, we have not talked about the name that much. You know, even though some of you claim otherwise, I mean, I get that a lot. You know, I will occasionally see a tweet or I'll read an email about how obsessed I am with the name conversation. And I think to myself, we haven't even talked about the name in a month now. What are you talking about? It's been a topic, you know, on the show for sure, but it's not been an obsessed about topic, you know, certainly not this time of year. I know I get passionate when I do talk about the name because I feel it. You know, it's an emotional topic for people like me, you know, legitimate longtime fans of the team. But Daniel, you're right. We haven't talked name in a few months, you know, other than a few mentions here and there. And I guess that's because it's the season right now. And the team here in Washington with the name most of us hate is having a really good season and an unexpected good season with a star at quarterback. You know, that all adds up to, you know, the conversation we've had in the past, which despite my passion and my distaste for, you know, the name and the branding and the emotional disconnection it's created, I understand what the priorities out there have been, and I don't disagree with them. Winning is number one. Winning is number one. Number two is probably the name and logo and branding. And three is probably the stadium. You could flip-flop two and three if you want. So the conversation about a winning team, you know, is going to supersede Trump, the name conversation, while it's actually happening. And that's just, you know, playing the hits, as they say in radio. You know, there is an old expression that we have been told over the years by program director after program director, and it's very much a music station, you know, adage, and that is play the hits. And understand that not everybody's listening to the entire show, so keep playing the hits. That's why sometimes some of you will say, God, you stuck on that same topic, or you kept coming back to that same topic. Yeah, because most people don't listen the way you do, who's complaining about it. Most people listen in 15, 20, 25 minute increments, and then they're at work or they're in the, you know, at lunch or whatever it is. So yeah, the hit right now is Jaden Daniels and the Washington football franchise, who is 8-5 and solidly in playoff position in the NFC. Now, with respect to, I think, Daniel, what you really were referring to, this logo thing recently, I'll be honest with you, I'm not really following it that closely. I understand Steve Daines went on Fox and suggested that, you know, the logo will be a part of something, but he didn't say specifically they're bringing it back and putting it on the helmet. And I know a lot of you jumped to that conclusion. You know, let's say this about the logo.
The logo and the name are two totally different conversations in terms of the long-standing reaction to them. With that said, you're not going to just bring... Well, let me explain. The name, obviously, because it was, and this was the only argument that the anti-namers had, was dictionary-defined insensitive. That, even though, you know, a lot of, you know, language evolves. We've been through this argument a lot. Language evolves. I've said for 15 years now, the team years ago should have petitioned a dictionary for a second non-pejorative definition. Redskins, noun, football team that plays in Washington. Done. Second definition, conversation over. Because that's what it's meant for now 100 years, 80 years. 75 years. Let's, you know, if you want to say it didn't really become part of the, you know, culture for until 50 years ago, that's fine. But language evolves. You know, certain words that may have meant something a long time ago mean something different today. And words get updated in dictionaries all the time. But I'll move away from that other than to say, obviously, when people use redskin or redskins in this day and age for the last 50 years, half century, they're not even referring to Native Americans. They're referring to the football team that plays in Washington or a player who plays for the football team that plays in Washington. That's always been my commonsensical, from my standpoint, you know, these are all subjective things, approach to it and why I think the team had other paths to pursue for a long period of time, but of course they were too stupid to do any of that stuff and instead decided to antagonize a lot of the time. But anyway, moving on, the logo, there's never been any sort of suggestion insensitive. It was designed by Walter Blackie Wetzel of, you know, an actual Indian tribe. You know, it's always been considered to be a very positive logo. Nothing insensitive having to do with the logo. But let's apply that to practicality. You're not going to bring that logo back and stick it on the helmet if the name of the team stays the same or moves to something that doesn't have Native American imagery. I mean, it would be a complete disconnect from a branding standpoint. So I don't personally think that the logo is coming back in the way some of you think it's coming back. I don't know for sure. I hope it does, and I hope it's attached to Warriors or some new name that, you know, where the logo would make some sense to be on the helmet with the old uniforms. I do. But there would be a bit of a branding disconnect if it stayed Commanders or if it moved to another name that had nothing, you know, from a Native American imagery standpoint in terms of the name. So, Daniel, two answers to your question. One, we're in season. It's about winning, and you got a winning team for the first time in a long time. I mean, they have 8 wins in 13 games for the first time in 28 years. 96 was the last time that they had 8 wins in 13 games. So this is, right now, the greatest season as it stands now in 28 years. We haven't had that. We haven't had what we have been dealing with now for 2 months. A winning football team. We've had playoff teams, but they've been late charges to the playoffs. They didn't look like a playoff team in September, October, November, into December. This is the first run we've had of a team that's looked like a playoff team. You know, take 2016 out of the equation because they were 6-3-1. And I would take 2018 out of the equation as well because, yes, they were 5-2. That's still early enough in the season. And then, you know, Alex broke his leg, and we kind of knew that it wasn't that good of a team anyway on offense specifically. But if you want to throw 2018 in there, fine. But we haven't had anything like this.
since 96 when they started 7-1, and then they started to lose games, and they were 8-5 after 13 weeks. So I think this is, you know, this is playing the hit right now in town. You know, even compared to what the Caps have been doing, on the flip side to what the Wizards have been doing, which is actually interesting at this point, just how bad they are. And, you know, you had no college football season in College Park. You have college basketball, which nobody cares about this time of year. This is, thankfully, always the number one hit. The games themselves, the team, how the team's doing, the conversation about the team this time of year. And what's so beautiful is that we're able to talk about one that is right now looking like a playoff team with a superstar potentially at quarterback. Which, by the way, leads me to just this to finish up this conversation. By the way, if you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980. If you want to tell me that you believe that Steve Daines and the team, that this is all of an indication that the logo's coming back, if you have any thoughts on this, go ahead. 301-230-0980. Not really a specific question there for you, but, you know, I know a lot of you, this, you know, riles you up. So have at it if you'd like. But what I was going to say is just that, you know, the all of this is leading to, for those of us that want everything to change, the name, the uniforms to come back, the logo to come back, etc., it's the best case and the worst case that is developed, right? The best case being they got a quarterback, finally. They've got a good team, it looks like. They've got good structure in the front office. They've got a general manager. They got a head coach. This thing is arrow pointed up like Washington and Philly in the NFC East for the next 4 or 5 years. Going to be fun. Washington's going to be a factor in the NFC for the next few years. But that also leads to the possibility that, man, we just got to the playoffs at 10-7, won a game. Although 10-7, you got to beat Detroit or Philly. But getting to the playoffs, and we talked about this earlier in the year when a potential division title was still a possibility. They get to the playoffs, they win a game or two. Imagine if they're in the NFC title game. What do you do then? I mean, there's a process involved. You can't flip it tomorrow. And would this be kind of the get out of jail free on this decision, which is very complex for Josh Harris and Mitch Rales and Mark Eine and Magic Johnson and all of the decision makers in the organization. I've talked about this for, you know, a while now. There's no easy answer. Now, to me, answering it is better than not answering it. Doing something about it is better than not doing something about it. But if they were to make some sort of run in the upcoming NFL playoffs, it'd be fun. It'd be great. And at the same time, for those of you, and I feel this, I'm with you. I haven't backed off my feeling on this. It still, to me, doesn't feel like the emotional connection that I once had with the team. It feels very different. And trust me, they know that. They've been dealing with that, too. You know, we had John Orand on the show last week, 2 weeks ago. Denton, he talked about, you know, the ratings are not wildly up, you know, in terms of the number of people that have started to watch these games. We've seen, you know, it took until what, the Chicago game to sell out. We've seen still a lot of, you know, opposing fans. And we'll probably see a lot of them on December 22nd when they play Philly. But, I'm into watching this team right now. And this quarterback in particular, the offense, the offensive coordinator, and all the questions around him, not just historically, but just in season, you know, the changes, et cetera, or the suggested changes from a lot of different people. We'll talk some football with Sam Fortier at 11. All right, Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Oh, bad day for the Wizards on Tuesday in the NBA Cup, which they have already been eliminated out of. They lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers 118-87. They are now 2-17 on the season. They've lost 15 games in a row. They're getting mighty close to the NBA's longest losing streak. Still a long ways to go. That longest losing streak is 28 games. They've only lost 15 in a row. But they have the last time they won a game, the MLB postseason was still going on. The Dodgers have won a game more frequently than the Wizards have won a basketball game. In the NHL, the Capitals lost to the San Jose Sharks 2-1 in overtime. Tonight, you get the Terps in action. They start Big Ten play against Ohio State. Tip-off at 6:30. Pregame right here at 6 on the team at 980. Also announced yesterday, Aaron Rodgers getting a new documentary on Netflix. It's titled Enigma. Going to go through his journey from recovering from an injury, playing football, his spiritual journey, which is Netflix's way of saying, we're going to show him do some drugs. It drops later this month on Netflix. And that's what's trending.
Sam Fortier is going to join us in 10 minutes. Sam was part of several Washington Post reporters that reported on this request from Maryland senators for a yes vote on the RFK site bill in the Senate. The request being one of D.C.'s National Guard air squadrons. We'll find out more from Sam about that at 11. We'll talk some football with Sam as well. I know a few of you want to weigh in on the conversation. Again, what I just read was from Daniel, who wrote, Kevin, I've been listening to you for a long time. I've never called or written, but I've been surprised by your reluctance to talk name and logo recently. What gives? And what gives for me is we're in the middle of a season and we've got a really good team. And you know, I'm into this team right now, you know, not in the same emotional, visceral way as I felt in the past. I know a lot of you feel the same way. I understand that. I'm not detaching myself from those of you that feel that way at all. I get it completely. But it's kind of fun to watch this team and watch this quarterback, to watch guys like Frankie Louvu, to see it done professionally for the first time in this town in a long time. And then with respect to the logo, I just don't know what it means. Steve Daines talking about, you know, having a good comfort with the organization's commitment to making sure the logo doesn't go away. I don't think it means it's going to be attached to the helmet in 2025 or 2026. Again, from a branding standpoint, if they were to keep Commanders or move to another name, if that other name didn't have Native American ties or imagery associated with it, why would you put that logo on the helmet? All right. Aveen, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. The thing that's annoyed me the most about the rebrand has been the uniforms. Those were timeless, iconic uniforms. You don't see any other, really rarely see big iconic sports franchises change their uniforms like that. And I just feel like that would be a big help if they just brought that back. It carries weight that, you know, Terry McLaurin wears the same uniform that like a Daryl Green, Art Monk wore. So that's the number one priority for me. And I'm just curious. I know something's been lost with you with the rebrand, but I don't know. I feel like the name is getting kind of normalized now. It's been 3 years. The team is relevant. I don't know. If they brought back the uniforms and the logo, would that make any difference to you?
Yeah, definitely. I've talked about this. Like, I do expect that something will be done with the hideous uniforms that Jason Wright and his, you know, in and outer from LA developed, you know, in a room together without much input. By the way, the team yesterday announced that they had hired Mark Klaus as the new team president to replace Jason Wright. He is a guy that served as president and CEO of the Campbell's Company and has since 2019. We will have more on that later on in the show, and I'll tell you what I've learned about him. But anyway, I'm with you. I think that is something that they will do. I think that there will be kind of a branding redo at some point, and we'll have uniforms that it will either be exactly or closely resembling the old uniforms. You know, whether or not that means the logo on the helmet I would love it. Love it. I actually don't mind the W on the helmet. And as I've told you guys many times before, Redskins is never coming back. I get it. You know, the league would never allow it. There are too many corporate sponsors. Even as the pendulum swings back to something approaching common sense in the world we live in, it ain't coming back. It's still way too controversial, and shareholders of big corporations that support the NFL would have a problem with it, and therefore the corporations would have a problem with it, and the NFL's not going to do anything about that. I promise you. However, to me, I still think Washington football team makes sense. And then we can get back to the old uniforms. Kevin in Bethesda. Kevin, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, longtime listener. I just wanted to say, I don't know if you noticed the past 2 years, they've got this thing going on, canines for warriors, that they established. And the warrior would work, put a feather on there, Washington Warriors. You could also stick with the with the logo with the Native American on there. So just my
look, I think it would be Warriors right now had the ownership and the management of the team not been so incompetent with some of the trademark stuff that they had owned for a while on Warriors. I think that was always, Kevin, I'm pretty sure, Dan's plan B in the event that they actually had to give up the name. But they let it expire, and then it became costly to get it back, and it was a bit of a nightmare with Jason Wright and the group that was there, you know, trying to come up with an answer. But go ahead. Sorry. Nope. Lost Kevin. Warriors with the old uniforms. Sign me up. Joe in Westminster. Joe, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. Good morning. I also like Warriors. I like Tribe. I think that would be really cool, but I really think we go back to your initial idea and just call them Washington Football, old logo and everything. Everybody calls them the Redskins anyway. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, the skins are burgundy and gold. Yeah.
Or the skins. Yeah. So, and HTTR is still like a Twitter thing. So that, right. And the other thing, Kevin, I wanted to mention to you, because I've heard you say this a bunch of times about petitioning the dictionary people about a second dictionary definition. I'm not 1,000% sure of this, but I want to say that it was changed in the early 90s when this all first started coming up to call it a derogatory thing. I think if you look into it, you will find that the people that are in charge of kind of writing dictionaries and that kind of stuff tend to be more of the persuasion of people who are very anti-name.
Yeah, I don't know the history of
quite some time.
Interesting. I mean, you're suggesting that the history of the definition description changed. We're not talking about, you know, the name itself. That's interesting because it has been for a while in Webster's and, you know, every other Cambridge, whatever the dictionaries are. It's been, you know, what's interesting is in most dictionaries, it's never been described as racially insensitive. It's just been described as insensitive or a slang term for something pejorative, a pejorative slang term describing Native Americans. I think there may be one dictionary that actually uses the description racially insensitive. But that's interesting. I don't know. Maybe you're right.
Yeah. I bet if you find an old dictionary like your mom and dad's house and look it up, you're going to find that the definition changed. It wasn't.
Do you have a dictionary in your house anymore?
I do, packed away in a box with a bunch of other books.
Good for you. I don't think I could find a dictionary. You know what, though? I could find a thesaurus. That's the Denton, the Oscar line, as Michael, Pam, and Jim are scrambling to get to the hospital with Pam being pregnant. And Michael says, should I bring a dictionary? And Oscar says, no dictionary, bring a thesaurus. It's a great line. All right, Sam Fortier next.